We're going to be discussing the idea of the false binary.
What an illusion of choice does, it establishes the baseline assumptions that nobody questions.
This is part of the fifth generation warfare that we've talked about. Voting for the lesser of two evils is definitely an emotional, psychological trap that people are in.
You're cheerleading for an insane ideology because you think you're winning.
The role we have as media, how do we help everybody understand this is theater and you need to get back into the real world?
If you're opposed to the agenda, you should oppose it regardless of who's selling it to you.
Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome back to the IMA, Independent Media Alliance panel, Solutions Watch edition. I am your co-host for today, James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. And a special thank you to all the Corbett Report members who found the link in the bottom of the last edition of the Corbett Report newsletter to watch us live. And if you are watching live, please note that you can leave comments in the comment bar there, and please leave your questions and your comments and your interjections, and I will make sure that I bring them to the attention of the panelists today. And boy, do we have a all-star panel to talk about the question of AI, artificial intelligence, and its uses or not, or lack thereof. There's a lot to discuss, so let's get into it, and we're going to start by introducing the various panelists, some of whom you will know well, some of whom you won't. So what we're going to do is introduce everyone by name and website in a rapid-fire manner. I am James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and joining us today is, for example, Hervoye
from Geopolitics and Empire.com.
Ryan Christian, The Last American Vagabond.
Kit Knightley from OffGuardian.org.
Jason Burmis, Burmis Everywhere.
Hakeem Anwar of TakeBackOurTech.org.
Whitney Webb, Unlimited Hangout.
And finally, Gabriel has gone completely green and muted, so I don't know if he's actually there. Gabriel, are you there?
I'm here. If you can't see me, I am Gabriel at Gabe.rocks is my website.
All right. Let's see if we can solve the green screen problem. Anyway, so what are we talking about? We're talking about the concept of artificial intelligence and when and where and how and if the various panelists use AI in their work. But Hakeem, you are going to be co-hosting today's conversation. So why are you interested in this subject, and how do you want to frame this question slash topic today?
Yeah, thanks, James. Good to be here with all of y'all. And we were having a conversation about 2 weeks ago talking about how there are some things that AI is just making more efficient for us. And it started off this thread of conversation because now I am seeing a growing number of content creators, activists, really leaning into AI. And it's an interesting point that some people feel that AI is helping them 10x their productivity for any whatever noble pursuit that they have in life. Others think that, hey, without AI, I wouldn't be as good of a technologist, as good of a coder, as good of a writer. I mean, heck, this thing can write a lot better than me. And so we end up with these publications that are now potentially completely written by AI, yet they're still going viral. All of these things, these phenomenon, are giving me some weird feelings, and I'm sure they're giving everyone here weird feelings too. So the question is, how has AI impacted your work? Are you using it at all? And where do you think this is all going with the content effort? Who wants to go first?
How about Steve, who we did not introduce? So let's let him have the first word here.
I'm Steve Boykin, and I have a show called AM Wake Up. You can find it pretty much everywhere but YouTube. I've never seen such a more obvious threat to humanity, to natural law, to our fundamental rights as what is facing us with the very obvious digital prison infrastructure that's being constructed all around us. And yet it's like watching it. The metaphor isn't even the ostrich putting its head in the sand with most people, because they're walking around with a giant sand pit in their hands at all times. And I think that we, as always, find ourselves with unique opportunities here and there to kind of reinforce the ridiculousness of falling into the trap of building your own digital prison or funding your own digital prison. But we're seeing a consolidation and acceleration of forces to make sure that this thing is built by, I guess, the target date of 2030. And I would like to suggest to everyone listening that if the most foul, vile, evil, slithering creatures on the planet can unite to get this thing done, then perhaps the billions of us who aren't them could realize that there's more of us than there are of them, and then it would be relatively beneficial for all of us should we decide that, hey, we could put a stop to this just by saying no and not playing. And that's all it takes, is opting out of this nonsense as one for a relatively short amount of time.
Steve, I take from that you do not use AI whatsoever.
I am anti in almost all use cases. Yeah. I've used pre-existing images for thumbnail art here and there, for sure. That's the extent to which I'll use it.
Maybe I'll just add to what Steve was saying. Saying no, starting with the content that we produce, and to your point, Hakeem, some of the problems that I'm seeing amongst alt media is people using AI to do the work that they used to do organically. And for me, that's crossing the Rubicon when it comes particularly to producing critical content. So the written word or the content that many of us produce, like audio or video, for me, I feel like AI should not go into that. For example, I wrote an article quite lengthy for the first time recently, and I did not use every word that I put came from my own mind. And now we're seeing a lot of people using AI, and they're not disclosing it, but it's becoming evident to all of us consuming it. Mm-hmm. It's got the same syntax, and it's sort of like standardizing the content. And for that sort of content, we shouldn't use AI. To Steve's point, you know, when I needed imagery for a thumbnail, I would use Google image search. I don't really have a problem using AI for a thumbnail or something, you know, tertiary like that. But I think this is a problem that a lot of the folks, our colleagues, are using AI for producing, you know, written audio content.
If I could jump in next, I just had it's an interesting intersection here with we actually had a good talk about this in the last IMA panel, excuse me, about this beginning to this overlap and where it was going. And it's kind of a lot, you know, lots happened since then. And so I think with these opening two comments, I think I kind of come in the middle of this, which is interesting. And I'm very, very, very resistant, probably as much as anybody else in this panel, as we've talked about. Like, I'm exactly with Steve when it comes to being resistant about how this overlaps in our lives. At the same time, though, I've walked this line of trying to, like, just taking a simple example, like, as an interesting personal point to me, as you guys know, I am still, by the way, being sued for copyright claims, which are frivolous. In fact, in almost every case, illegitimate. And so what's interesting is I'm going through this and it's being weaponized against me. And I'm also going through this resistance for all things that we are fighting and built, and all the AI things and being immersed in our lives. And then I come across the idea of, like, using an AI image. And I've already seen them being just out there. For example, we're looking on just imagery. Half the time you can't even really tell. You know, some of these are very, very, you know, just kind of mixed in. But either way, going to something and going, okay, well, can you make me an image for something like this? And seeing that as a way around the copyright attacks. Now, at the same time, right there with you, I'm going, is this hypocrisy? Is it wrong to use this? You know, and that's, like I've said last time, I think that's a question that we all have to come into, come to our own path with, because the same idea with the internet, you know, like back in the other, the point I made last time is that if we're in a point where we had said we're never using the internet as a point to principle, and I would even respect, you wouldn't even be involved in the conversation right now. And that's not an excuse to say leaning into it. It's just trying to find that path. Now, the point is, when it comes to the images and so on and writing, I agree aggressively with Ivory in this, that it's about you being the creative side of this, writing, content, anything. And I guess you can make the point about the images, right? And so that's why I think it's important to address that and bring it up, because it is something that is in this conversation and worthy of, you know, I'm sure there are people that criticize that in the use. And I think it's a valid, you know, use within that. But I guess my larger point in all of it is that I'm trying to kind of traverse this problem, but I'm never in my, the line I will never cross is using it to say, make me something in regard to content, write something for me, or, you know, make me a video. And there are people that I think it's okay because they're like, well, it's my idea. I'm entering in all the details and it's just giving me the, you know, I disagree with that, you know? And so I think this is this very difficult line we're all walking. And I think that the bigger part for me is about how it builds into the data side of it, the data mining, the surveillance, the digital twin point, how all of this is being collected to be used against us, you know? And so I really just kind of pointing all that out. And I think it's a great conversation to have because I think even within all this conversation right here, or the people here, we have varying opinions on it. And so I'm interested to hear where everybody is.
Allow me to be the next level hypocrite because I use it all the time and I make videos with it, right? But in regards to making videos with it, I'll give you an example. Working on the Epstein mini docuseries right now. When I say I'm making videos, I'm taking photographs from the files that are 100% real, and I'm using them as B-roll with a 5 or 6 second clip. In fact, if you go watch my trailer, you can see a few examples of this. I don't think I'm doing it in a dishonest manner. You know, I'm also taking David Rockefeller in front of the United Nations and animating that, et cetera, et cetera. Now, where I do think it's a big problem, first of all of it's narrative management. I need to really reiterate that. That's the largest danger. And Avori was just talking about using Google image search, which most of us don't have a problem with, or searching it for URLs. All that's going away. I hate to tell everybody. I don't know if anybody watched this past week, but this is really probably the emphasis of my discussion. If you didn't see Google's open announcement, they are not only track, trace, and databasing you, they are literally not only creating your digital twin without telling you, they're bringing in agentic AI to buy things for you as they circumvent old search engines. So now you're just going to have a conversation for this with this extremely deceptive entity. That's where the biggest dangers lie. I'm going to give you just a really quick example of one of those dangers, but because I do use it for research purposes. But I use it for research purposes when I know what I'm looking for and I can't find the actual source document. And I catch it lying all the time. By the way, I'm going to show you in 4 prompts where it not only admits it lies, but then when it grovels to you and tells you how much it lies, it's still lying. Okay. So just a quick little dick-a-dick-a-do. I see this document right here, and it's part of the Epstein files. It is where the FBI was obviously taking a look back at Palm Beach, and it looks like Leslie Groff, Sarah Kalin, some of these other people that were working within the Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell circles. So I went to AI. Here's the whole conversation. Obviously, it's very small, so people can't read it. But if James wants, I'll give it as a link so everybody can read it. So I just want to know if I could find the actual EFTA file so I could go get it in full res for the documentary purposes, right? So it doesn't give me anything of use because this thing is totally narrative management. And I say to it, obviously, are you completely useless? I asked you which document. Can you provide me the file number? So it doesn't do that. It gives me some nonsense. And then I ask it for something pretty specific. Can you provide me links to photos with Jeffrey Epstein and David Blaine? Okay. It then tells me they don't exist. They exist. Okay. It makes up a narrative where it doesn't exist. And it says it's not in the public domain. So then I come back with, this image doesn't exist. It's not in the public domain. And then it admits it's a liar. And then I ask it on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being very accurate and valuable and 10 being useless. And in fact, detrimental to the facts, what it would rate itself. So the AI will come back and it rates itself a 9 out of 10 as quote unquote, highly inaccurate and actively detrimental to the facts, which it is. Because it's always based on the authoritative narrative. Now, I come back with it because even though it grovels and it tells me how much it lies to me, it gave me nothing of merit. I go, why not a 10 out of 10?
Why are you continuing to use it if that's the case?
Because every once in a while, I will find a quote, right, where I can't find the source document. And then it will lead me to a PDF file archive where I can then go in, download the PDF files and then search within them for those type of quotes. So,
is all that hassle worth it to you?
It used to be easier, Whitney. I used to be able to type in something towards the document and I would just get that URL. And that is kind of my frustration with
right,
this.
Right, but now it's like they're going to meter the knowledge back to you. Like that Sam Altman quote where it's like, oh, well, yeah, we've scraped the internet of like literally everything everyone's produced ever.
Yeah, but where do I go for it though?
Remove it all. And we're going to sell it back to you on a meter. So like now that it's, you got used to using it when it was good and like of good quality and got sucked in, now they reduce the quality, right? And
but where then do I go though?
To even obtain the quality you had before, you have to pay. And the tier of payment will just increase so that you can continue to chase the rabbit.
I think I can answer that question. Sorry to interrupt. I think that this is an interesting phenomenon. But whenever you start to use AI in one aspect of your creation, whether that's writing or coding or even using a search engine, you start to lose track of your abilities quite quickly because it becomes that much easier. So like the answer to it, the way I have used it, and I have used it for research, but not totally for research, is to ensure you're always walking alongside what it's doing. So asking it for links to primary sources the entire time, to ask what it's even searching on the web and looking at what search parameters it's using to find things, and to give yourself ground rules. For myself, I have built pretty impressive things with the help of AI. I've also seen other people build things with AI. And I think at the end of the day, there is merit in some of the things that they're building. Just to give you an example, you don't have to put this on screen, but this is a data center map of 4,500 data centers and 600 hyperscalers throughout the country. I built this in a matter of weeks when this probably would have taken me half a year. But fucking data centers, there's not enough time for that. I mean, just in the time I last published this report, I've already found 400 additional hyperscalers. So it's the catch 22. You're damned in some ways if you don't use it, but you're damned if you are. But one thing I did notice was that I saw my skills slipping because of how easy it was to relay some tasks to this AI. My personal ground rules is I never use it for writing. So I never use it to say my words for me, but I have gained some acceptance of saying, hey, this particular source, go ahead and dig into it for me. Find me sources like it. And it has made that part of investigation a bit easier. I totally agree that your abilities start to slip once you give that away. But it's about finding the balance for each individual person. So for me, like Ryan and like Havore and probably a lot of you others, it's to not pass off the writing as my own and to not even lean into that at all.
Can I add one thing to that really quickly? Because I think this is a really important point. And the way you framed that was really good. That, you know, as it is important for people to decide what they think is appropriate in all this. But the line for me is what you said, is the aspect of creation, you know? And it's very important, I think, that doesn't, like, there's a middle ground here where somebody, and I'm sure half the panel would probably disagree with this, and I'm not even sure if I, you know, anyway, the point is that people can use it to seek things out. The problem for me, though, is like you said, they're saying, can you dig into this for me? How do you know it's missing something? Or it might be missing something. Maybe it's misleading you, like Jason pointed out. I feel like these things are deliberately being manipulative in many ways. And so the problem is where, like, I can see a use in finding something that otherwise might be difficult to find, but then in any way allowing it to, like Whitney's saying, relay the information to you, that's the choke point. And I think that's the dangerous part of it, you know? And I think that's an important point. So please continue on your point, because I think that was
nailed it. And I mean, this is what I've learned watching James, Whitney, Derek, and yourself, Ryan, for so long, is to question everything and to take me directly to the sources and not make assumptions based on that. And so, like, at the end of the day, I just wrote an 80-page report, all of it manually by hand. I was telling James this, and I realized one thing about my writing sucks ass, and it's important for me to recognize how it sucks so I can work better at it. If I just offload it to the AI, then I'm taking this massive shortcut and I'm writing the stupid same phrase that AI does. Oh, it's this punchy thing, not this punchy thing, right? You've all fucking seen that. So sorry to curse, but yeah, my goal is to grow better in everything that I'm doing. and build my own inherent abilities. And then that is, I think, the most dangerous thing that AI will take from you. It will literally sap your own abilities and for the sake of an empty productivity value.
Can I just go back to my original question, though? Like, where do you go to search? Because it's not like I don't just. All right. So I'm done with my Google search and then I'm supposed to have DuckDuckGo. I obviously know how to use an advanced search. I use that as well. I'll give you a great. First of all, Ryan's 100% right. I'll give you another great example. I was trying to figure out the two other people that were not allowed to testify in Able Danger by the Department of Defense outside of some of the names that were more known. But I also had a name in there of an FBI agent, Xanthi Mangum, that was ordered not to testify. So it lies to me at first and tells me that the two other names are classified. They're not. I then bring it back up that this name is out there. And then it did give me the two other names. I was able to search those names and find primary documentation. Again, I'm not looking for this thing to write for me.
Sorry, I don't mean to like interject too much, but like, are you saying in your question that like you don't know where to search for these source documents beyond AI? Like, where no. else are you supposed to go?
So, for instance, like I have the hearings, right? I'm in front of, say, all of the Able Danger hearings. I've got the lawyer's testimony, et cetera, et cetera. The people that have showed up, I've already got their names. But, you know, I find an article where it tells me there are five people. So I'm missing a couple of them. So within the AI, questioning who those two other people are and then bringing up another third person, they did reveal the names. I was able to search them in context with Able Danger, find the source documents. Give you another example. It was almost impossible for me to go back and find the original NORAD tapes. And it was through AI that I found one PDF file that had a link to the actual WAV files. You know, I'm not saying I like it. I really don't. But my point is that the old ways that I've used literally now for 20 plus years on research are being stripped. And I think that is on purpose.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Well, again, we still have time. I do want to make sure we hit everyone in our use of AI. We can come back to that, though. That's good stuff.
If you want the Corbett Report perspective, let me bring in my secret weapon to this conversation, which happens to be video editor extraordinaire Brock West, who, I'm sorry, did not get a chance to introduce himself at the beginning. But Brock, let's talk about it from the Corbett Report perspective. Obviously, I am not interested in AI for research purposes. I am not using AI to write my stuff. Never have, never will. That is absolutely my line in the sand. But as I have alluded to before, absolutely, I use the machine transcription to get the transcriptions of Corbett Report podcasts. Is that AI? I don't know. Some people call that AI. I don't know if I do. And recently, we've started using AI images for some of our images. So let's talk about that, Brock.
Yeah, it's been a hello everyone, Brock West, video editor of the Corbett Report. It's been a pretty rapid slide down the slippery slope, hasn't it? I mean, to go from where we are right now, this was inconceivable 18 months ago, I got to say, like maybe even 12 months ago, that we would be using AI generated images for cover art and thumbnail ideas and everything like that. With regards to video production for the Corbett Report, we haven't put it in there to a full extent yet, and it's absolutely not putting in prompts to generate content. I'm working on a project at the moment of revivifying one of our old documentaries, which uses a lot of black and white and still images. And I'm using a colorizing app, I guess. Is that AI? I don't know. I upload the video, I upload the images, and it brings it back to me in 1080p in color. It's a paid service, of course. Is that AI? I don't know. Like, where's the line there? But, you know, in this particular scene, I have possibly the only colorized footage of Colonel Edward Mandel House. And that, as a video editor and a video creator, that's a cool thing to have that unique colored image. I'm going through a thunderstorm right now here as well, guys, so there might be some crazy lightning strikes. like that.
On cue. That's good.
Thank you. But yeah, it is incredibly pervasive. There's a definite ick factor to this, and one of the pillars that I used to think that the alternative media would stand on is our credibility and our honesty and our transparency, and that we're not like the mainstream, where we're going to lie to your face and everything. And I think it's a really interesting thing. I'm really happy that Whitney Webb is with us on this conversation, given that she is probably the most AI duplicated person that I've ever seen online. It's crazy.
Insane.
I still see it to this day. It's just these copies of copies of copies of Whitney. So I'm really looking forward to hearing her perspective on it. So my personal line in the sand is much along the line of James's as well. I do not want, and I will not put in AI created, you know, prompted content, generated content into the videos that I create. It's wrong. It doesn't feel right. We're feeding the beast. We're building our digital prison, as Steve said. And also another point that Steve made, I think that's really interesting, is the sort of the enshittification of AI. And if you are using AI generated content, it is now incentivized for that first prompt you give to give you something ish close to what you want. It's not, whereas even a few months ago of using it, it was pretty bang on quick, where you would put in a prompt and it would spit out whatever, and it was pretty close. But now the more generations you make, the more tokens, the more coins, the more money you have to spend to get closer to what you actually want. So those big tech companies, they're gonna find these models to get more money out of you, get you to purchase more subscriptions and everything like that. And that's a dangerous rabbit hole, as we all know. So it's a blurry line in the sand. I completely understand Ryan's perspective with the copyright issues as well, because you know they will find any way to hit us, and especially someone like Ryan, who they just seemingly have the target over 24/7. It's really a personal choice for each content creator. And right now, guys, as we're all seeing, the unifying force around, especially in the United States, but I would say around the world, is the AI backlash. And how is that going to affect how you're perceived, how your outlet is perceived to your audience? You know what I mean? If you're just constantly using AI thumbnails and constantly using certain AI generated content for your particular productions, you know, that's something we all need to consider.
Just to say that when it comes to Gelman's amnesia, is there's this idea when you read something in a newspaper and you understand the source material and you're saying, oh no, this is inaccurate, this is wrong. And people see that when they search AI for their own domains of expertise. But then what happens is that when they read something that's out of their domain of expertise, then what happens is they realize, oh, this is, you know, take it at face value. And so with AI, you see the same kind of discussion going on where they don't care if it's outside of your domain. It's important than what you're seeing going on. In short, I call it Gelman's apathy, where you care about AI use in your own domain, whether it's art, whether it's writing, whatever, but then people are kind of not caring if it's used in other things, such as, oh, I don't know much about medicine, I don't know much about accounting, let's just let it run roughshod. And I think that's one of the things letting this whole AI takeover go unopposed, is that people are fiercely protective of their own domain, but then kind of just let it go, whether it's things either they're doing and they don't care as much about, or they're in an institution and they're not as fiercely protecting the areas outside of their own domain. And I think it makes it really confusing for the general public, where, as we've discussed, it's not clear where the boundaries are. I kind of put AI tools in two different buckets. There's AI, as most people understand it, you know, the cloud chatbots, the large language models, these kind of like automation systems. But I also call things like power tools, which is things that just use the advanced mathematics behind this technology to accomplish particular goals. And that's interesting and neat, and doesn't necessarily have to come with all these other problems attached to it. But there's a lot of nuance in what is the tool actually doing, and more importantly, what are you using it for?
I want to add to that, the only field that maybe there isn't that Gelman's apathy is tech itself. So many technologists have just leaned into it even more, and I want to applaud you for being one of the ones that, I think, following your channel, you're not using AI so much, if at all.
Correct. I mean, I do like to experiment with it to understand what is the current state of things. Like, for instance, I'll have it generate a few images to see, okay, what is it doing? How is it effective? And one of the things I find kind of disturbing is that, for instance, you can use ChatGPT, and a lot of people I interact with, you know, IRL, will use it very regularly for this purpose. And in some ways, it's getting better, but like Whitney kind of pointed out here, it's getting better at specific things. And I even wrote in one of my own pieces about this, that like, we cannot assume these tools will be as generally useful as they even are now or were in the past. And this is a huge problem because, like you brought up, you know, there is a price attached to this, but it's not just price. There's also more KYC, there's more technical hurdles. And so when it comes to the question of using this stuff, again, I do think it's interesting to follow how it's doing, because this stuff is impressive. Like, I've taken a look at what can be done. Hakeem, you pointed out that like, you can accomplish things quickly, but I think this creates another problem where not only are people devaluing their own skills, but they're actually, you get this kind of self-conscious inferiority complex compared to the beast. It's like, oh, the beast can do so much. The beast is so capable. How can I ever compare to this? But the fact of the matter is, we are doing this at the cost of developing, as you say, our own skill sets, our own mastery over crafts. And a lot of this is, I would say, we as a society are not investing the, you know, emphasis on developing, mentoring, and honing skills in a way that, like, you know, you can blame Wall Street, you can blame the, you know, central banking model, you can blame all the different things, but I'm just saying, as a consequence, it just so happens that AI is attacking people's ability and agency to do things in a time where it is more important than ever to preserve those things.
Yeah, we were just talking about this on the show, I think the other day, but the sort of death of the apprentice and the apprenticeship program for a number of different fields, whether it's trades or not. And there was such an emphasis for about a 30-year period for where they were openly just, you know, shitting on anybody that wanted to get involved in the trades. And, oh, that's a, you know, anachronistic profession and learn how to code and all that. And now we've got graduating classes booing tech CEOs who are talking about this is, you know, the industrial revolution for AI, and it's already almost come full circle with that. But there's a complete generational gap of apprentice to journeyman to foreman or master craftsman in a number of different fields. And most of the old timers that really do, you know, were taught all of the tricks and stuff like that, they got a case of the Joe Bidens now. So it's a rough road to hoe. It is. I got, you know, there, if anybody has that knowledge, it should be imparted freely, generously, and immediately to as many people as possible.
I think that's a great point and a good stepping stone to sort of zoom out about like what AI is doing at a general, very bird's eye view level, which is that it's basically taking all of our it aims. And I think its owners and creators, at least in the big tech sphere, aim for it to take our ability to create away, which we are, a lot of people are voluntarily ceding to these entities for various reasons. Because obviously, you know, the framework of today's discussion is the use of AI in the production of independent media content. But also it's targeting music in a very significant way. And then as Brock brought up, it's also art and pretty much, I mean, also, but writing and you know, writing investigative articles or making documentaries and researching, all of this is art in its own way, too. It's creative expression. And when we cease to create, we become infinitely more controllable. And I think, you know, at sort of a bird's eye view, a lot of what we're seeing in terms of the broader trends that this is pushing humanity as a, you know, as a group is towards being non-creative and having AI do the creating for us. And the more we outsource our ability to create and our creativity to the AI, we will lose our ability to do it. And to what degree we will allow that to happen remains to be seen. So sorry for my voice. I've had like bronchitis for a month. It sucks. So basically, I think one way to fight against this is just to create in any sense whether that's creating a garden in your yard or creating something with your kids or creating, you know, written articles without AI or art, music with friends, getting your high school band back together and playing in a garage. I don't know, just like literally anything that involves that impulse and keeps it from dying. There has to be a resurgence of that. Not just in independent media, but beyond. But really, you know, I hate the term thought leader, but I feel like we have to have that energy if we're going to lead other people who are not the independent media people in that direction. Not everyone is equipped to do what we do necessarily, right? And everyone has their own strengths and everyone has their own things that they excel at creating in. And we have to start doing that because there's a younger generation that doesn't know how to create jack shit. No offense, but they're like being lured into relation, like even their social and romantic relationships are becoming virtual, you know, with like these character.ai character, you know, these mm-hmm. chat bots that are meant to replace relationships. And so the more we allow that to happen, the more dystopian everything's going to become. And, you know, obviously that's sort of like a little bit outside of the framework that was established for this specific conversation. So sorry about that. But I think it's really important that people, you know, it's not just like I know a lot of people that justify their use of AI in this space do so because they think they can fight the machine more. But I personally do not think that we can, to paraphrase, dismantle the master's house with the master's tools. You know, we can't really use, I don't know, ChatGPT to tear down the Sam Altman, Peter Thiel empire. You know, I just don't think that's necessarily helpful. And so I think what's ultimately ended up happening is that there's this productivity mentality that has taken over some people in our field, that they feel that they need to keep up with the algorithm, which is an algorithm set by the Silicon Valley big tech guys, who we must remember also double as military and intelligence contractors. They are the ickiest of the ick, and they are mass murderers, and they are using these same AI entities that people are using to produce content like Claude's Anthropic to blow up girls' schools in Iran. They are tools of mass murder. So if me, from an ideological perspective, I do not want to supercharge my work against the man by using the same tool that the man uses to murder children. No, thank you. And I think I kind of lost my train of thought there because I got mad. Sorry.
good. I'll just add on top to what you said, that what you actually said earlier, that you, once you open that door to people blindly just letting it be creative for them, that bringing it back full circle to your point, Whitney, that's where this becomes relevant to the conversation today, is that's where they insert the false information. Once we become comfortable with it, once they get you using them for creativity, and really the small points, you know, they'll give you 99% truth, but they'll lie where it's really important. I just think that's, you know, bringing it back full circle.
So, well, you can't trust the accuracy of this. And I think a lot of people should go back and read this book that the evil people named Eric Schmidt and Henry Kissinger wrote together in 2021 about what AI would do to society, because it's all literally come true. But basically the goal is to have the information environment be such that no one can really distinguish what's real and what's not anymore. And that you will have to end up, they say, turning to AI to be your arbiter of truth in such a polluted information environment. How convenient for them. And I mean, that's literally happening. I mean, isn't it interesting that everyone's trying to copy independent media now and everything is conspiratainment or conspiracy tinged? And now you're having like Candace Owens and Hunter Biden doing interviews and being like, Joe Biden was a victim of the Epstein class, and acting like everything's conspiracy. They're all trying to be like us, dude. And it's because like independent media, real independent media has resonated with people. And so they're just trying to copy the formula, but with higher production value and maybe AI, or they're taking some of our work. I know it's happened to me where people have taken articles I've written in the past and just run them through AI to make the wording slightly different and then just pushed it out. You know, I mean, you know, it allows people to launder the credibility of others and build themselves up, which is an interesting conversation to have on its own as it relates to plagiarism and stuff like that. But it's really allowed, I think, you know, PsyOps and InfoOps more broadly in the digital media space to take off. And in the geopolitics and empire Telegram chat, I noticed something that I found very insightful, the idea that most podcasts today are really national security operations. The big high value production ones, I mean, they've moved away from mainstream media into that model. And these are the things that are really moving public opinion. And like I said, they're trying to copy us to a significant degree. And I just think that's kind of disturbing.
Well, to say the least.
It means that it was working. All of our efforts were working and still are.
Yeah.
Working.
And so now they're trying to drown us out. So like Brock brought up, I've been highly impersonated. Because I don't really do a lot of video content. I've done interviews on other people's shows just because I've never been interested in interacting with YouTube. And like, I'm much more happy being a writer and being judged on my written work than going out and like being a talking head. It's just not really my thing, but I do it and I've gotten better at it and less like petrified and mortified while doing it. But it's just not my natural element, you know? And so like if you search my name on YouTube, because like I happen to, people like to watch videos of me for whatever reason, like a litany of channels have appeared that are just like, I don't know. They use thumbnails. Some of them don't even look like me. They're crazy. And they have all these, well, I've talked about it with you, James. We did a whole interview about it. Oh, I've been like completely repersoned, but now I have literal AI, like digital twins that read scripts I didn't write and like have, I mean, it's really gone off the rails. So, Whitney, what
is your recourse on that? Because obviously that is a huge problem. It plays into this whole thing we're talking about true independent media. And, you know, I saw Matt Baker comment on how many of those videos he saw and he thought they were you. And we are living in this. I get it. I
have no way to really do anything about it except like pin a tweet to the top of my Twitter account that I don't really use that often because I like hate all of this big tech social media controlled crap. I don't know. It's very annoying.
I would say it's beyond annoying. It's defamation on another level.
It's not only that. It's literally like the years of hard work and credibility like I did from my career when it started in like 2016 until like 2023, because I had like a gap because like my then 2-year-old son was super sick and I was like in the hospital for a really long time and didn't work. And then I got sick after and whatever. So In that period of time where I like had a gap, all of this stuff just sort of popped up like mushrooms after a rain to crowd out my real content and sort of have been making people think that I'm like a doomer at the time I was accused of being a doomer in 2024 and being super blackpilling a lot of the thumbnails. We'll say things like it'll happen in 2 weeks, mass destruction of the U.S. in August, blah, 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 like all these changing timelines. And so I like look to people like I'm crying wolf about all these doomsday predictions I'm like not making and have really worked hard to try and like tank my credibility that I worked really hard for. I mean, yeah, it sucks and it's demoralizing. And I mean, I know, I think it's demoralizing. I mean, I don't really know what to do beyond, you know, we're going to try and launch a video show. Because the only way I can report these channels is if I have my own YouTube channel. So I don't know. We'll see how that works.
My biggest worry with the AI doppelgangers is, you know, I've seen people amongst our ranks sharing these AI copies. You know, I've interviewed Dr. Paul Craig Roberts like a dozen times. And on his newsletter some months back, he shares this interview. And I go there and, you know, I got fooled for 30 seconds. I'm like, wait, this is AI. Dr. Roberts, why are you sharing this? And I see other people sharing it. And I think the onus is on us and listeners to become discerning enough to realize this is fake. Stop sharing it. And to circle back to a few points, these topics of agency and dehumanization. I think this entire AI, I've had guests on this whole stuff about transhumanism. It's like Borg. This whole process is to dehumanize us, take away our agency. And going back to writing an article, you know, when I wrote the article that I did a while back, I enjoyed the journey. You know, I'm going to the CFR archives back to the 70s, and you know, I'm actually kind of enjoying the journey instead of letting AI do it. But also another topic I wanted to sort of branch out into is I feel like we're up against the clock. Late last year, early this year, I was looking into the developments that comes to them taking away our compute, right? Our computers. And Gamers Nexus just dropped like a 3-hour segment on it this week. I did an interview in February with Brian McLean. And I'm just flabbergasted because they're going to take away desktop computers and they're moving everything to the cloud. And in that Gamers Nexus 3-hour segment, which I watched this week, one of the experts said, even if you have a high-end desktop, cloud AI will be able to do way more than what you can do with your desktop. And so I feel like they're moving, and that's why they're building the data centers rapidly to put that compute there away from us. And so I don't know if Hakeem or anyone else has more insights, but I feel like at all levels of society, they're taking away our agency. And then, like someone said earlier, they're going to rent it back to including water. I saw Rob Du mention how in Austin now they're bringing like installing digital water meters, and so. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the Borg thing really quick. If I can just, because I have to probably leave in like 15 minutes. I just want to say that it's the push is to a hive mind, like you brought up earlier also, like the standardization of everyone using AI to write, how all the writing sounds the same. It's the great homogenizer. I mean, that's exactly what this is doing. The more people use it, the more they get the input back. And then the way the chatbot talks to you makes you like feel good and you get more sucked in. I mean, a lot of people that are interacting with stuff are having their thoughts about things in general or the specific things they're looking into being homogenized. And the goal is to sort of have consensus about specific things all being controlled by these private companies, which, as I said earlier, private military intelligence contractors. Gross.
It does seem that way, that these data centers and the whole AI push, which, by the way, they are massively overbuilding data centers, and that much is obvious. The data center boom in China was in 2023 and 2024, and 80% of those data centers are sitting empty. They literally don't have anyone to lease them. So it's a obviously bad business decision. Why are so many data centers being built? Like Havoru is saying, well, one, it's driven up the prices of all of the other compute, and being able to, you know, run your own computer yourself, even your own local AI, is at least that's more valuable and independent than being tied to a cloud AI, which these things run on massive amounts of compute. So this is the power grid overlaid across these data centers. And you can just see how these are just littering every part of the United States. And there are massive clusters. So what I've built is a way for you to check how many homes are being displaced. So let's go to Avondale in Phoenix. And I'm using estimates from academic papers like the Lawrence Berkeley National Lab paper, which they're the only ones to do a bottom-up modeling of how much water data centers use. And based on the total power capacity, you can actually see, like, let's see, you click on a triangle here, and you can look at the formula of how I break it down. It's all cited. That's all good and well. But there are different parts of the U.S. that are going to be pushed out of even being able to pay for their utilities. And an interesting point a friend brought up in conversation is that now this can happen programmatically. So during a summer heat wave, like literally by controlling how much power the data centers are using, you can cause an economic strain to people in that region. And again, like the amount of power is ridiculous. We've spent $2.5 trillion in 2025. We've, according to this data, which I've sourced from public sources, we've already built 50 gigawatts of compute. That is more than the United Kingdom. That's more than China's total capacity all in a few years. And we're only 40% of the way through. The majority of compute, which it's going to quadruple, and is we're going to go to 200 gigawatts for the entire United States. So data centers will take up 40% of the country's power supply. That is absolutely ridiculous. And so we're all going to see these massive power hikes. Now, I'm going to end this by saying that in the grand scheme of things, I don't think this, I think all of this is going to fall apart. It's a massive, massive bubble, but I think they might try to drag our natural resources down with it. And I think that's one of the most important parts about this conversation is that, hey, when you use these things, you are justifying the existence of these data centers and potentially dooming us all.
Let me take this into a further conspiratorial conversation, if you will, because I think that I hope you're right. And I hope this is a bubble. And I hope that this, you know, is something they think they can do and they fail. But going back to what Hivori was talking about, and this is something he introduced. I hadn't seen it until he posted that. And it's alarming in this, the computer side of what he was discussing. But what was interesting to me from what they were saying from the gaming perspective and how the computer parts and everything was just rapidly diminishing what was being sold is that they saw the same thing we were talking about, but from a different angle, that they're literally shifting people in from ownership to rentership. And even they use the word techno-feudal and everything. It's coming from like a gaming perspective. I just thought that was so interesting. And so they literally are seeing it only through the lens of the, you know, the gamer side, your computers and that side, but feeling like they're being pushed to a place to where everything you could once own, you're being forced to then rent from people who could then hike up the prices, control what you can access, and data included. And I think that clearly applies to much larger than just the gamer perspective. So what I see coming is the same thing we saw happening before from a different angle, or rather just two parts of the same kind of great reset, you own nothing and you've never been happier mindset. And even going back to the larger sort of network state point, as I think Hervoy was the one to point out as well, it's all going digital. And Ian Davis made the same point, is they're driving everything to a point to where, you know, you can access the keys, but you don't own the actual, I guess, data space or the storage or the compute, which is just so interesting to me. And so I think that brings it to that level of where I think the larger, whatever it would be, the Silicon Valley point, the governmental point, whatever we see it as, driving us to a place to where that's the world they're building. Now, I hope that's wrong, but that is much bigger than just a business model, you know? And that's what I see it relating to. I'm curious what you guys think about that.
It's a total control model. And that's why I literally have more than $1,000 in my hands in RAM, when this cost me about $400 3 years ago, okay? I mean, I am that guy that's not giving up my personal compute, just to let everybody know. Gamers get it because they've been in the world of licenses. They've bought games day one that aren't around in 18 months anymore because they only have those licenses. Now, speaking to what Hivori said about water, that's the biggest thing that I don't think people are really getting about these data centers. Look, NASA, DARPA, who funded Google, you know, I've been showing people this white paper more and more where you can see the seed funding, the anatomy of large-scale hypertextual web search engine. But during this time period in the late 90s, they started hyping up the idea that we were running out of fresh water on this planet. Well, I got news for you. The only way we're running out of fresh water on this planet is we give it over to the machines, which is now happening in rapid fashion. Look, I think there's going to be some kind of financial failure, but honestly, I think they'll utilize that in order to bring in some type of digital currency. You guys were talking about the younger generation's relationship with technology. Well, think about it this way. This entire generation, many of which can no longer write cursive, therefore cannot read our history of the last several hundred years, if not thousand plus years, are already used to not having even a computer with any compute power. They have a Chromebook that is hooked up to the cloud. Their iPhone, they don't keep their photos on their iPhone. It's all in the cloud. On top of that, they've built personal relationships with Siri and Alexa. You know, as much of a hypocrite as I am, guys, just to let you know, I turn off the damn microphone on everything, and I've never used Siri or Alexa in my life.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter unless you actually have a private device. It's still listening to you.
Listen, I get it. I know what automated content recognition is. I've been screaming about this stuff forever. I realize, look, the track trace and database is over. These data centers are not that. They are more along the lines of not only the pre-crime that Whitney's been screaming about, but the actual beyond narrative control, the control of your life. I mean, again, if you didn't watch this Google presentation where they're selling you on an agentic AI that is going to be able to get your concert tickets before you even know that person is in the area, and they're going to spend your money without your permission, that's what's coming. And that's my biggest concern, is that these, I mean, I'm going to have to start traveling and going to actual libraries and microfilm. And I'm not even going to be able to search
documents. But that
documents.
Would be one, cool.
One,
that's the I'm worst thing about living in Chile is Let that me, I can't do that.
Like, if you look at the posture, sorry, I got to say this for anyone using AI, whether it's Claude or OpenAI, hey, guess what? It's not going to be around forever because they will KYC it. Anthropic's already planning. They've already planned that flow.
And they give you your logs to law enforcement.
Yeah, and if you look at how, you know, the government is talking about China's AI capability, they're treating AI like it's a nuclear weapon. So there's no fucking doubt that they're going to ask for your ID. And it's going to happen soon, in the next 3 months. So I think, you know, that goes to everyone using AI right now. Hey, are you gonna live for it? Are you going to give up your ID? Are you going to give up your biometrics?
Yeah, but brother, just like you just said, they already got it. Look, I want to believe too. Like, I get it. Listen, I've never used my face scan to open my phone. I've never rubbed my finger against this thing. Do I think they have my fingerprints? Fuck yes. Like, they obviously have my voice, right? They have
my demeanor. I understand your point, but there's a difference between like, to maintain access to my iPhone, I'm going to let it scan my face every 5 seconds. And I think that they probably have that info anyway.
Whitney. I'm pissed. They're now talking about getting rid of two-factor authentication, which I already hate.
Yeah,
or biometrics. I get it. I'm with you.
So here's the thing, though. If they already have it, then why do they want it again? And if they want it again, they don't need it from me because they've already taken too much from me. I don't know about the rest of you guys. I grew up kind of outlaw. I'm going to die kind of outlaw. And I'm always going to make it a lot harder for them to get what they want from me, then I am going to willingly volunteer to just give up whatever scan at whatever time.
Really quickly.
There's the psychosocial acceptance thing. That's the reason they keep asking, because they'll take it without your knowledge, but what they want much more is for you to give it up. Mm-hmm. That's far more important. I realize we've been going for 58 minutes and I haven't said anything, but I'm alive. My defense is that it's 2 o'clock in the morning here and like 30 degrees. And I think I might die. So,
please don't.
I think we've ranged really far from the original question about generative AI, and that shows what a big topic this is. I mean, we've got 10 people here talking about AI, and we're not all necessarily talking about the same thing. And AI is a spectrum. Like we all use it all the time. Like search algorithms are AI, and spell check is AI, auto transcription is AI. And what we end up talking about actually is what it's being used for rather than tool itself. I mean, it's an age-old philosophical question, if a piece of technology, if a tool can be moral or immoral. I mean, people are arguing about automated factories taking, you know, work away from laborers back in the 1840s. AI isn't necessarily, I don't think anybody could say, is necessarily a bad thing, and it's not going to go anywhere. But what we're talking about being bad is its use as a deception tool. And that's far more important than whether or not some people use it to make art and then say, I use AI to make this art. Off-Guardian itself never uses AI for anything except images. And you can't get around doing that. Like, even if you don't do it yourself, if you sign up to stock image websites, an awful lot of the images you'll be downloading will just be AI generated anyway.
Not only that, but a lot of open source tools. Like, there's a lot of people keeping track of which projects are using AI to develop the patches and upgrades they make. And so there will be a difficult question of how easy is it to disconnect from it entirely. And that's a fair point. But I don't think it being something that's hard to avoid is the same thing that it's not worth thinking about how and where you do choose to use it.
So can I just talk about the stock image thing? Because, again, working on this documentary thing, for the first time ever, stock videos, they have an AI tool that I can actually manipulate them right there. For the first time ever, when I download a track, one of the cool things is a lot of them will give me the stem. So if I just want the bass line or the drum line, great. But they'll let me edit it with AI right there if I want. Now, I have not driven down that road. I am still looping beats that I'm taking from bigger songs. But let's say I need 2 more seconds on the tail end of that drone video going down the street. It's not even an AI tool. It's built into Premiere where I just extend it out and it generates it. So I'll leave that as food for thought since we are talking about using it in a workflow. And obviously that's an extension of my traditional workflows over the past 20 years.
To what Stephen Whitney said. Go ahead, Whitney.
Well, I just have to leave probably. So I'm just going to say my last little spiel and head out. Cause kid bedtime is approaching. Basically from what a lot of people brought up, obviously the internet and the nature of computing is going to change as they try and force more of this down our throat. I think as people in independent media that have credibility and are ideologically in this for the right reasons and motivated for the right things, we have to grapple with what that means. Because we will not be able at a certain point to continue doing what we do the way we've always done it. Things are structural problems or other types of problems, various obstacles are already appearing and they'll continue to appear that we'll be forced to say, what are our red lines and what are they not, right? And this has always been the nature of the discussion around things like digital ID that a lot of us have been talking about for a long time. What happens when you have to have a digital ID in order to have an account with an internet service provider or any other number of things that are needed to connect online and distribute information. So like, for example, in my case, this is one reason that we're working on leaning onto a print magazine and trying to make physical media as well. And obviously, even with that, there will be a time where like maybe people won't be able to pay for it because they'll break in the money so much and we won't be able to ship things in the mail without some account that they won't approve or I mean, who knows, but we're going to keep trying to do it while we can, while also not crossing those red lines. And so everyone's obviously going to have different red lines. And I'm not in the business of telling anyone what to do. I'm not really interested in getting preachy about it. But I do think it is, considering what we face and what this force that is behind AI that's fundamentally anti-human and pushing us to a world that's very controlled and not creative and, you know, spiritually dead, among other things. If we don't want to go in that direction, we have to draw our lines in the sand and figure out, from a risk benefit perspective, how much we are helping the fight by crossing these different hurdles. You know, are we going too far down the wrong path just to, you know, feed our audiences more content. And, you know, at a certain point too, we have to keep in mind that like a lot has been thrown out there to try and manipulate us in independent media in terms of like chasing virality, for example, or chasing the algorithm, which is highly manipulated, but virality itself is heavily manipulated. Social media accounts are admittedly now for a few years, there's tons of completely AI generated accounts that aren't even real. You can't even trust the number of likes or retweets or comments. A lot of it is made with generative AI. And we know and have known for years that a lot of the entities that invest heavily in those types of bot farms, which are much more sophisticated now with AI, are the state, militaries, and intelligence agencies. Manipulating people for various ends. And some of that is directed against us as well, right? And also, you know, a lot of these platforms were engineered to be addictive to the human brain, and some of that can affect us as well. And so there's a lot of different issues here, but ultimately, I would like to think that we, you know, it's so crazy that influencers and journalists, it's like it's a category that's merging, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, we do influence people, and we should try our best to influence people to resist this in their own personal lives. And we have to lead to some extent by example. So personally, I think we need to promote that people create something, a parallel system, ideally, to not interact with this system to its full extent. But there may be a time where we need to, in order to really resist what's coming, not consent, and maybe lose aspects of our internet access or our ability to research, and we will have to adapt and change.
Whitney, those are powerful words to leave us on. But before I let you go, I want to bring in a comment. Thank you again to the Corporate Report members who are in the chat. And we have this one in. Apparently, Lieutenant Colonel Karen Kwiatkowski was just on Judge Knapp and said AI is in control of a spider web of military technology targeting girls' schools. Alex Karp has no handle on it. Isn't that stupid? Well, maybe it is, depending on what you mean by that. I'm assuming the implication here is that it isn't Alex Karp of Palantir in particular that is handling this military technology. But Whitney, from your research, what do you know about that issue in particular?
You mean about the military having like...
The direct role of Palantir in particular as having specific knowledge of individual targets.
Well, I think Palantir specifically knows much more about you than you think. And I think the amount of data that has been amassed on us. I mean, I remember stories 10 years ago about massive NSA data centers and like Utah and various states before people were even talking about data centers, about all the information they've been compiling on people. And I think it's important to keep in mind, too, that even going beyond Palantir, the internet itself was created by the military, and I think now we're coming kind of close to the end game in terms of full circle of them kind of realizing their initial dream for the internet. And then, you know, in the case of Palantir, you know, I argue in a lot of my research points to various efforts within the DARPA military sphere aimed at the internet being privatized. For example, LifeLog becoming Facebook, Total Information Awareness becoming Palantir. You know, these have become reality. They've been messed. A lot of these big tech Silicon Valley companies are just masquerading as we just started in our garage and we're regular guys. Like, no, these are guys that were created by military intelligence. And they privatize these programs, and we have willingly given them our data, and we continue to do so. And so even if you have Palantir having access to privileged information, think about something in that same family of company like Clearview AI, for example, which is also Peter Thiel connected, that has amassed this huge database used for facial recognition by law enforcement and militaries. So, you know, to arrest and also to murder people. And they just scraped most of that from stuff, pictures people freely and willingly posted. We voluntarily gave a lot of our data away, and they've been able to scrape a lot more of it than you probably think. So in the case of girls' schools, in that particular question, why wouldn't they? I don't know if that was a reference though to like the Iranian girl schools that were like blown up.
I assume
in Iran. Yeah. So I think this sort of brings up a separate issue as well about the use of AI by the U.S. military to decide who lives and how dies and how autonomous that decision making is. And when you have AI that is not 100% accurate, it's obviously going to make horrendous mistakes. And even before AI was used in that type of decision making, we had horrendous mistakes happen on part of the U.S. military, such as war crimes from Iraq that you may remember. Right. And so that happened without AI being in there. And now AI sort of allows them to commit war crimes and they can just blame AI and not a specific person and kind of hide behind that. And I think it's a very terrible precedent for warfare. And just allows them to sort of have carte blanche to, well, I don't know. I mean, also you have the fact that like the insane like gunboat diplomacy of the Trump 2.0 era, it's just like they can blow up whatever they want with whatever AI they want and whatever autonomous Palmer Lucky drone they want. And you know, people on the supposed liberty loving side of the United States are like, yeah, that's totally based. Let's do more of that. And also have them create a stable coin bank. Little, you know,
and let me bet on it.
Yeah. So, obviously, discourse is very warped around this stuff. But in terms of Palantir, I think, and I said this in a social media post a few weeks ago, that if you're familiar with the neo-reactionary movement, and a really great introduction to that is Ian Davis's book, The Technocratic Dark State. There is this push from Peter Thiel, the Thielverse, and all of these tech oligarchs that are aligned with him, not to single him out, but it's a squad, to basically create, turn the U.S. government into a private corporation, which it technically already is. The multinational corporation runs everything, right? But it's a way to sort of formalize that and have, you know, a national CEO run the country, as a dictator, and they call it, you know, either SovCorp for sovereign corporation or GovCorp, a governing corporation. And I think Palantir is basically being set up to be the beta test for that, because they not only have they been handed the military and our entire intelligence community, they've now under the current iteration of Trump been handed all of our agricultural data, all of our healthcare data, and IRS. You know, I mean, it has just expanded and become total. And I think that's extremely concerning when you consider the people that run this are literally ideologically aligned with people that want one company to replace the governing structure of the country. So,
well, and also if we
allow them to continue, yeah. But if we allow them to continue to do this, Palantir will. They already. I mean, the New York Times said they already know everything about you and literally called them the one seeing eye. And total information awareness is the pyramid with the beam covering the earth. You know, I mean, they're just like rubbing it in your face. But what it ultimately comes down to is that, you know, obviously those of us in independent media putting ourselves out there, we're putting a certain amount of data into the void with the hope that people will wake up and do something about it. But if you are watching this and this stuff concerns you, starve them of your data as much as possible. And I think the most powerful thing you can do is get rid of your smartphone. I know Hakeem sells alternatives, but if you really need one, you know, but you do not need to have an Android or an Apple device on you. You can live without it. You lived without it before. And the more, I mean, it's the biggest generator of data for them. And their whole plan fails if people just mass non-comply with them. It's very important.
Can I just say how nice it's been Whitney back? Can we just celebrate that she's back after 6 weeks? Thank you for coming back and laying down the truth. Please come back soon.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. We missed you. Sorry, go ahead, Ryan.
I'm sorry. What'd you say?
Go ahead, Ryan. The floor, brother.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, but anyway, though, it's great to have Whitney be part of these in general. You always bring such important information to the table. What was I going to say there? I just lost my train of thought. Sorry, guys. Go ahead.
If I could just speak to the drones quick, like, I don't know if everybody saw the news this week, but
I will just say bye-bye now. I'll leave my browser open. I saw the message. Bye. It was nice seeing you all. Take care. And fuck our would-be tech overlords. Good night.
I mean, I don't know how people don't get the drones argument, because the drones argument, I mean, I've been talking about this for 2+ years, ever since the Ukraine conflict kicked off, but there was controversy. They started reporting on the fact that Starlink hooks into the drones that are being used in that conflict. And then for some reason, it was headlines as if people shouldn't have known this. But then the Muskernuts came back And he said that's supposed to be Star Shield, which is the ultra new DARPA blackjack network that's supposed to be the privatized military network. But that just speaks to it, right? This thing that's being sold to people like Steve out in the woods, right? I remember when you first got Starlink and telling me the crappy speeds on it as a commercial thing is actually being utilized to coordinate real life warfare, hooking into the very drones that Whitney was just talking about. I mean, that should, you know, the gig is up right there. But again, for some reason, people still talk about Musk like he's the second coming of Jesus Christmas.
They still use Starlink on the farm up there in the middle of nowhere in Humboldt County. And it's only because there's a massive amount of satellites up in the air around it now that it has any kind of speed. When I was there 4 years ago, it was like there was one, it was a third party vendor that, you know, I was contracted with. And yes, it was absolutely terrible service. Absolutely. It was, yeah, a nightmare. And I was very pleased when I got to Vegas and I didn't have to drive 40 minutes and park on the side of the road and have my truck running while it powered my computer and ran off a 4G signal off of my phone to do an interview, which I did a number of times.
Just on Starlink real quick, I've got one as a backup, and it is fast download speed. And I do have to tell you, it's here in Mexico, it's saturated. There's a lot of demand, and often you don't have many options. Some of the ISPs suck. And again, we're constantly being forced into these positions. They're taking away our compute. They're taking away internet access, taking away our agency. I'll just add on some of the AI stuff. This week, Spotify announced good news. They're now launching AI-generated podcasts, so I guess some of us can retire. I guess the other good news, people have been commenting on the socials that there will be a premium for organic produced content, whether it's like a paper cut, right? Was it where Ian's book was first published, Whitney's magazine?
You're saying generally people will pay more for real stuff.
I'm hoping. And I mean, for me, for example, I could never, one of my past podcast guests, Laurent Lecue, he's a financial analyst. He's got like an AI generated. He does good work, his written content, but he has AI generate a weekly sort of podcast summary. I'm like, I cannot, no matter what, I cannot listen to something that's not an authentic human. So I think that's one point to drive home that, you know I'm only going to consume human organic content. I think there's a swath of listeners as well, no?
Well, all I'm noting that really quickly, which is interesting, is that it's going to get to a point to where, I mean, Hakeem, you could probably talk more on this about like technologically where, and they're working this out now, where you can create a voice that might sound like a normal voice, you wouldn't know the difference, but has the right inflections, right? The right things that makes you feel comfortable, that makes you, you know, lures you in more. And that's going to be, that's even more terrifying. You know, that you get to a point to where people will desire that. Not because it's even more informational or informative, but because it's manipulative, you know. And
I make a point on that. That's such a good point, Ryan. And I have there's something I've been thinking about that I haven't heard other people talk about with regard to that. For me, when we talk about, for example, the AI music question, it really strikes me that we have been moving in that direction for decades now because of Pro Tools and then AutoTune and those types of digital tools, which all of the artists adopted. So now it is absolute industry standard. And if you are being produced by a professional producer, 100% your vocals are being tuned. It's, you know, there are manipulations going on to the point where now people who are learning to sing or learning to play an instrument, they don't want to learn to sing like a natural human being. They want to learn to sing like that pop star they're listening to who has been tuned. So it does not sound human. That is not a human sound, but we have become so conditioned that we think that that is natural and we're trying to emulate it. So now I guess we can lament, oh, okay, people are going off the AI deep end and now they're using this, you know, computer generated content, but we've been heading there. What is the difference fundamentally in a tuned voice that cannot exist in real life and an AI generated voice?
Well, there's the flip side to that that Hervoye was pointing out with the organically generated content becoming like a premium thing or a sought after thing, where it is a very, very, you know, boutique style of thing, but you know, having organically and very much analog produced albums is a making a huge comeback all over underground hip hop. It is. There's an artist named Prof who is going off like crazy about this. Sturgill Simpson is doing the same thing. He just put out a freaking disco album, changed his name to Johnny Blue Skies. And it's, you know, like, I'm not even kidding. It's fantastic. And it's being, you know, released in physical media. There's a huge push for physical, you know, physical tapes. He put out tapes to this, you know, but he also put out CDs and stuff like that, did album pressings. And it, in the same way that there's a, you know, kind of organic generational pushback on everything being artificial, on everything being forced shitty, you know, the easiest way to enjoy in organic content is in person. Like, do this, you know, do live events, go to live events. Go to the Third Eye Carnival this September 18th and 19th in Portland, Tennessee. You know, it's one of those things where we kind of have to reinforce it, being in person and having these ideas shared where we don't have to worry about what's spying on us digitally. It is a huge component of what we need to be talking about in the face of all of this.
I think
go ahead, Kit.
Fundamentally, there will always be some things about being a person that a machine can't replicate. And I think historically, you would look back to the rise of photography. You know, for centuries, the pursuit of visual art was photorealism. I'm going to paint something that looks like something in real life. And then photos arrive. And what that gave birth to in terms of artistic movements was impressionism and post-impressionism. It was the painting of an expression of something that a person can feel that a photo can't capture. And you could see the same happen with AI. There will always be a part of being a person that cannot be translated into a digital piece of technology, that cannot be translated into an AI model.
Well, see, this is where I've come back to the point I was making. James, you make an excellent point about, you know, like the validity, or I guess just what, I guess even what resonates the most. But once you bring it to a point, and I was thinking, I think the reference point I was thinking of was a musical point someone made, not about the lyrics, but the way the music like was like manipulated, like it's almost like some kind of like hypnotic kind of a thing, or whatever the right word would be, that it's not natural, but it lulls you into something, you know. So when you bring it back to that point, you know, then you're going to drive people into a place to where they're unnaturally wanting what's not natural. But I agree with you, Kit. There's something that you can't really put your finger on. I said this about, you know, people who write music from the heart, people who cook from a place of love. Like, that may sound crazy to some people. I truly believe that there's something that the unquantifiable, that you can't really, that I hear that song and I, you know, and I listen to Taylor Swift sing something she bought. And it's like, you know, this one feels different. Or, and I shouldn't even say it like people we know. You take two unknowns. I would argue that most people probably be able to feel the one that came from the heart, you know? And so my worry is that it comes to a place to where it becomes technologically manipulated on top of the perfect.
Yeah, I agree. But let me go even one step further, because I've come to the conclusion that the real wrong turn was the invention of recording itself. I think recording itself fundamentally changed the fabric, the social fabric of music and what music is, because it used to be something that had to be produced by physical people in a room with you, implying some sort of social fabric that already exists for that environment. It is now something that can take place by yourself, sitting in a room, listening to something that was recorded whenever by somebody else who may not even be alive anymore or whatever. And it has become not only socially distanced like that, but then, of course, what is the motivation to go out there and actually learn or practice or be involved in these communities? It becomes less and less. And the recorded electronic person, already just with the invention of recording, you already start to get the, you can do 1,000 takes. It doesn't have to be right. And if there's a mistake, you just start over and do it again. So there's all those levels of manipulation that come in with the technology itself, which changes the social fabric. But maybe that gets outside the bounds of our conversation today.
Well, actually funny, though, because like people in the early days of photography, people would say, And, you know, native people would argue, I don't want to have my photo taken. You're gonna rob me of my soul in some way. Always been that weird aspect to it.
Yeah. I
put in the plug in for Media Matrix one more time. Because for people who didn't see that documentary, it is a point that I make in part two of that documentary that I think is so important, is that this is literal, like, supernatural craziness. Show this to your great, great, great grandfather and, like, what the hell? You're communicating with people all over the world. They're not in the room, but I hear their voice. I can see them. What kind of witch conjuring are you doing here? And it's the anecdote I always love. It was one of Gutenberg's investors who decided to recoup on his investment to the Gutenberg printing press by taking some of the Bibles that had been printed, and he was selling them on the streets in Paris. And word got out about this because all of these exactly identical copies of the Bible were showing up. Literally, the lettering and everything is exactly identical. People couldn't conceive of how that was done because they had never seen a printing press before. And they literally arrested him for witchcraft. And you know what? Maybe they were right. I don't know.
The guest that Ryan and I had on AM Wake Up yesterday morning, Foundering, who has written a number of clever and very informative songs throughout the COVID era, and now it's gotten him in a lot of trouble. His main thing is presenting to people for the first time music from the ragtime era, from like the 1850s through the 1890s. And it's music that was never recorded. In his personal perspective is that was the best era for music was pre-recording. He made that point a couple of times yesterday. So it's interesting that you brought that up, you know. And this is a savant as far as music goes, a child prodigy who believes that to the core of his being.
I think with every single one of these movements, it is all on a wave, right? So I do think that there is going to be a big part of the populace that will go deeper and deeper and become an AI mind controlled slave. But I do think, like, you know, we'll go to the farthest portion of its AI's adoption. And I do think on the other side, as you guys have pointed out, there's just a human yearning towards wanting to go back to organic intelligence, real music, real vehicles, right? It's just gone too far. And I think that this, I've made this point before, that it naturally needs to reach that conclusion of total information awareness for people to wake up to their own awareness. So I think it's exciting to be on the edge of that. And
before we wrap up the 3 month point, I've been interested by that because I really hope you're right on this in regard to that you feel this is going to be pushed on us in a few months. I'm curious what the driving force is on that. Like, what? Because I was more thinking that it would be something that would, like, they would need us to accept, because I feel like I see it as something they can't, if, like, for example, if they suddenly made it that we had to pay for it, or, you know, we had to be boxed out of it, I bet you that would push out half the market. And so I'm wondering if there's something you're seeing that's going to, like, justify that push very soon, is that more people could fight it, you know?
Yeah, I'll close with this because I do think it's a big deal. I do think the cyber war is coming, the cyber war, right? CEO of Anthropic they like to say that China is merely 9 to 12 months behind us. And Claude's new model, Mythos, is commonly talked about at being able to find zero-day vulnerabilities 70% better than its predecessors. So what they are preparing for is an all-out cyber war with China, which means all traditional infrastructure is going to go down. So right now they're defending it, but, you know, the point remains that if they are treating this stuff like a nuclear weapon or an extremely powerful weapon, that why would they just let everyone have free access to it? So I do think that within the next 6 months, we'll see an identification gate in order to use AI. So yeah, you know, if you use it, go ahead, keep using it, use it as to your heart's delight, because it's not going to be out there forever. And that's something, you know, it's obvious to me that that's coming. Just a few short plugs. This has been a really good conversation. If you're interested about knowing about data centers in your area, go check out AIdatacentermap.org. Thanks, James. This is the map, and I have just finished an 80-page report that tells you everything you need to know about data centers, everything from their legal life cycles to the people in the U.S. that are fighting back and getting them kicked out to the ecological impacts that happened. And I didn't use AI to write it. So do check that out. And also, Whitney brought up degoogled phones. Check out abovephone.com if you want to use a degoogled phone, or even better yet, do it yourself. Look up open source software like GrapheneOS or DivestOS or any of that, and stop feeding the beast that is there. Thanks.
I guess maybe I'll just add Retro Pizza Hut. Have you guys seen that pizza? Old school Pizza Hut's making a comeback.
Let's do it.
and just another example of, I feel like, maintaining agency to what James was talking about, music. I got to see, was it last week, the last Megadeth performance in Latin America ever, because Dave's retiring. And at the arena here, I took a photo just of the stage, and then like 3 20-second video clips, but I couldn't bear to put myself in the photo like everyone else, because I feel I'm like those Native Americans. I'm like, because that's part of the appification, I call it, of your brain. You're not there because you're recording and you're not paying attention. And it's like, no, I want to soak it up. Maybe a few years later, I'll be not happy that I don't have a photo, but we have to train ourselves, train our memories to retain that agency. And I guess I'll just add, I don't know if you guys saw, China is now giving humanoid robots digital IDs. So I think we're really crossing Rubicons here. And I'm just getting around now to watching Westworld show from a decade ago. And I think a lot of what we're talking about is encapsulated in that TV show with the AI.
Don't bother after season one.
Come on, bro. When they leave the park and they're all still in masks and he's talking to agentic AI, watch the whole thing. The whole thing.
just like AI and everything, it goes downhill. So I just think we have to maintain our agency, humanity, as much as possible, not comply. And I'm going to add one more thing for James. I don't know what's like, if James has been doing crack lately, because I can't keep up with the amount of content you're putting out as of late. Like, you've hit hype. Are you using AI? And so I've been like weeks behind, and I'm gonna binge on James.
That well-known stuff. Productivity drug, crack. No. I'm just working as hard as I possibly can, because I am quite concerned about the hour of the time that we find ourselves in. But thank you for noticing that, Hervoy.
I mean, I'll say, I think it's important to keep in mind that I don't think this file is hopeless, even though the technological landscape is scary. Technology and advances in technology do have consequences. And I want to plug TruthStream Media's documentary, We're Being Held Hostage in a Technology Bubble, because I think she does a fantastic job at articulating the structural impacts of various technologies that have already come here. This isn't, the new AI stuff. This is stuff that's already happened in regards to transport and access to infrastructure fundamentally. And I think that's actually a really good analogy for where this is headed, is that we are seeing structural shifts based off this that are going to have impacts on people, left behind. And that's why you hear the scaremongering around the idea of a permanent underclass, which is part of the PSYOP pressure to adopt these tools and get better at them. And I guess what I'll say to kind of push back against that idea is that, like, look, these tools are designed to keep the humans out of the loop. So specializing in it is effectively specializing in something designed to kick you out.
Well said. We'll jump in. Just enjoy this conversation, guys. I think it's important that we keep doing this. It's reaching people, I think. But, I think what's alarming about all this is the bigger level view of it, and I think it's a really important conversation to have about this. But like I said in the last one, I think somewhat a consensus in this time is that it's a very personal line for a lot of this, whether you want to like use it to try to make other people see from a certain perspective that they're being manipulated and not take its word, or, use it to make images or use it to research, there's lines for everybody. And I have my lines within that, but I think it's something that we have to go through and rationalize on whether or not it's in our interest. But I think the creative line is what makes all the difference. And I think it's about letting this think for you. It's about letting this thing do the work for you. That can't be the line, because it opens that door for, as we've outlined today, a situation in which this thing begins to, one, you know, take over and it feels like it's working for you. And then suddenly it shifts. Suddenly the rug gets pulled. And now you need to give your digital ID. Now, and that builds in a place where you don't have to something to fall back on. Now, you don't get to go back to the old internet. Like, that's where this seems to go. Which, by the way, was why I was thinking, like, I feel like this is going to take a little longer. Only because I think the interest is not just about it's a surface level. I think it's much deeper than this, and I need people to not only be involved and to use it, but to, you know, choose to go in this direction. And I think that opens the door for removing what's behind us. And so I feel like it's going to take longer to get people involved, and I think that opens the door for more of us to push back. And I think that's really important. And I'll end with the point of something I saw today that it was just incredible. I think it's probably a lie, to be honest, but some claiming somebody has a collar that you can put on your animals, and it will, within 95% accuracy, tell you what they think and they're saying. And I'm thinking to myself, like, as a dog lover, owner, you know, I've had dogs my whole life, and I it's like they're my family. I thought that was, the idea is obviously enticing. I think, well, what a perfect thing to manipulate me. And I think, I first of all, that's not something I'm going to let in my life for 1,000 reasons, whether surveillance or whatever else, not least of which, because I just finally probably isn't even real, you know? And then that brings to the bigger point of all of it is that, like, as Whitney's pointed out for so long, even if this ends up in a place where it is actually functionally what they say it is, it's still going to be manipulated, like Elon Musk is demonstrating, but we should be concerned for a world in which it's not what they claim. And it's literally Elon Musk, like the Wizard of Oz, back there making answers for you and ultimately driving you in a certain position, or at the very least doing that until they get to a place where they can do what they want. So just be skeptical. And the dog collar is just an interesting point. You know, they're just going to feed nonsense at you and you'll buy it because you want to believe what it tells you, you know? So be skeptical. And I'm looking forward to the next one, guys. Thank you.
I don't need to hear my dog say food or ball over and over and over and over. I love him. He's adorable. He's my best friend, but he has two thoughts and I know what they are. You know, I'll close out on this. What Gabriel was saying, especially in terms of what's already here. I mean, keep in mind, if you live in California, you can no longer, they don't make new wooden stoves anymore. They don't exist. The manual transmission no longer exists as of this year. The last production stick shift vehicle went out the door at the beginning of the year. They're no longer being produced. The internal combustion engine is something that's going away. Small engines in California aren't being made new anymore. You can't buy a 22. You'll never be able to buy a 2027 chainsaw with a motor. They're all electric now, and they stink. So that's it. It's the inshittification of everything. And that's an opt-in. That's voluntary. And every time we opt in, we're increasing the acceleration of the inshittification. That's a choice that everybody gets to make every single day. You can look at Lake Mead or the Rio Grande, or you can look at the brown water pouring out of every faucet, and you can understand that these are all choices everybody makes. Every time you want to see what's the new thing on Grok, you know, oh, take this cartoon and make it look real or something like that. That's 17 gallons of water right there. You know, every little prompt for it is 17 gallons of water. And, you know, it's there's a number of states where gathering rainwater for you is a crime. And that's probably going to increase going forward as water becomes one of the commodities that is both highly regulated and highly sought after, therefore highly punishable. If you're gathering such a vital resource without the proper permit. So I'll jump on that. The things that already sucked about what the WEF was trying to scare everybody with 7 years ago, most of that already existed. The AI stuff and all of that, that's a sales pitch to get you into a fear porn state of acceptance that this is inevitable. And as soon as they get enough people going, well, I'm using it because it's inevitable. You guarantee its inevitability. though. James, as always, man, thank you, Pliff, for hosting. These are fantastic for everybody listening. You know, I'm not trying to tell anybody what to do. I don't want to preach to nobody either. I was, you know, just understand that there are downstream consequences of everybody's choices, especially when it has an impact that will have a very visceral ripple effect in very, very real time. I appreciate all you guys. I love the heck out of you, and take care.
You know, I just want to end with the idea that I believe that at least the AI that most people are interacting with, unfortunately, is an authoritative source amplifier and therefore an authoritarian control manipulator. And that, aside from the resources it's taking up, is probably the greatest danger. I kind of share Ryan's view that I don't think they can fast track this throughout all of society as quickly as they're selling us on it. As you know, James, a lot of these guys love to oversell, underdeliver, but we're also in a very, very bizarre time of economic instability globally that we've never had. We talked about a lot of the price stuff. We talked about the hardware. And we're also in this weird place of quote-unquote disclosure where it seems to be a hardcore push to separate humanity from this other that they are clearly setting up as some kind of either enemy or unknown. So I think we're in a very, very unstable, in some ways unpredictable post-truth world. And I don't think that we can go back. We got to keep pressing forward. And I encourage people to absorb as much information as possible and use your best discernment when making decisions in these arenas. Thank you, James.
All righty. My closing point is absolutely fantastic discussion from everybody. 11 years ago, James gave me the opportunity of a lifetime to come on board the Corbett Report and be his graphic designer and video editor. Looking back 11 years to my skill set then, to what I'm able to do now through me learning by doing. That is something I'm not willing to give up. That's my line in the sand. I'm not willing to give this up. And even if that means I'm yelling at clouds and raging into the dying night, so be it. There is still the opportunity here for us to create real content. I hate the word content, but create real productions, real music. That still exists, and I'm 100% still going to do that. And I understand the tools. It's a very nuanced thing. I mean, Hakim's data center map there is a phenomenal tool, partly created, as he admitted, by AI. It's a very nuanced argument. I understand that. But for me personally, when it comes to video editing, documentary creation, filmmaking, real will always be the way to go forward. And I know that might be pushing shit uphill. But what other choice do we have? Either accept it or resist it. So I thank everyone for their discussion today. It was not an honor to be a part of it. Thank you.
Looks like it's just you and me. I would close by saying that, as Ryan made a good point, that this has been a very interesting but a very surface-level discussion. We haven't discussed at all the public discourse around AI. And that's going to be an interesting thing in the next few weeks, because when I see AOC waving a glass of dirty water around the Senate floor talking about the dangers of AI data centers, or I hear the Pope talking about the need for the AI to be regulated, I mean, I'm sure you've been doing this as long as I have. You know that no word pricks your ears up quite like regulated does. I don't know exactly what they have planned for the discourse around AI, but I think it's going to be very interesting moving forward.
I agree. Any other final thoughts before we head out? All right. Kit, thank you for being up at 4 in the morning or whatever the hell it is over there. And thank you to everyone who has who has joined in on this chat, both, of course, the panelists and the people out there in the audience who came in with their contributions. I appreciate that. And remember, if you want to get in on these types of live streams, please do check the Corbett Report newsletter. I'll just highlight a couple of the comments that we had in, one from BC. I'm the same. No AI content for me, please.
Sounds like a line in the sand there. Jane Doe writes, only time I've ever used AI was to learn how to remove the telemetry module from my car. I used the AI within the Brave browser, which I think Pilato was alluding to that on a recent New World Next Week. They've just suddenly inserted it into the browser and in the search, no matter what you do. I tried a non-AI web search for this information, but it yielded no satisfactory results. Regular search has become noticeably deteriorated. I absolutely 100% can attest to that. I feel it and see it every single day when I am searching for information. It is getting harder and harder and harder and requires more and more searches. And one more, JG writes in with vast technological unemployment lays ahead. Robots versus sex workers. I don't know. Sounds like an interesting grudge match going on there. But yes, I agree that there is going to be profound changes to the labor market. And of course, you have the techno-optimists who say it's just like every other technological revolution in history. It'll displace some workers and there will be some tough times, but then everyone will learn to do new things. But when the robots or AI or whatever is doing all of the human activities like writing and painting and making music, I thought that's what we were trying to make technology so that we could spend our time doing the creative human endeavors. But now we're making technology to do the creative human endeavors. So where are we going? I'm sorry for deflecting this conversation towards the recording industry and all of that. But on the AI note, yes, it flabbergasts me that people do not see Inchitification when it is happening yet, because we've experienced it with all of these online platforms. We are experiencing it with AI. The gigantic carrot is being dangled in front of everyone right now. It's so easy. It's so amazing. It's 100% free and it's awesome and it does exactly what you want whenever you want it. We know where this is going. Suddenly it'll be a little bit more difficult to actually get what you want, and oh, you'll have to pay extra to upgrade, and then eventually we end up, of course, where it will be total garbage. But before that, obviously we're heading down a very, very dark road towards the total information manipulation of everything. And I'll end on this one final note, is that I had a particularly disturbing revelation with this the other day, where somebody was sending me their chat with their AI LLM, where they were proving that I'm controlled opposition because I'm a materialist and I poo-poo spirituality and all of that sort of stuff. And the funny thing was, of course, it's demonstrably untrue. I've talked many times. I've directly stated many times on numerous different podcasts, I am not a materialist. I think there is more to the universe than simple physical matter. I think there is a supernatural element, etc. But the AI has told this person that I believe that, and therefore, unsubscribe, I hate you, and you're obviously a shill. Okay, well, how can I argue with that? But the dark revelation with that was, I was thinking, well, this person is just asking their AI and offloading their cognitive duties to that AI. But actually, the thought occurred to me, this is probably the type of person who would never have bothered to actually look it up for himself anyway, right? He would have heard somebody say, oh, James poo-poos that, and we're just taking it. Now he's hearing the AI say it and just taking it at face value. So it all comes back down, I think, to our cognitive faculties, our cognitive sovereignty, and our ability to do things for ourselves. And it's going to get harder and harder and harder as people step more and more off of this cliff. Anyway, fascinating discussion. We could have 1,000 hours of discussion on this, but I hope that this has generated some thoughts among the people out there, and I'm going to leave it there for today. On the behalf of the Independent Media Alliance panel, thank you to everyone who tuned in for this conversation, and let's do it again in the not too distant future.